I went to college to become a public school teacher.
And I was a product of public school. My mom was a public school teacher for 30 years.
But when we had our own kids, our perspectives slowly began to change.
Now that we've experienced Christian school for our daughter, we can't imagine doing it any other way. I'm Chris Stigall.
And I'm Christine Stigall. We hope you'll join us with your kids in Making the Leap.
I'm in a school that's, not a covenant school. So as we're making disciples and we're teaching them about their dignity and created in the image of God, we're also very passionate. I'm very passionate of helping schools outside of our school do that.
Welcome into another episode of Making the Leap. We're so glad to have you with us today. I have just been loving the variety of people that we have been speaking with. I think it's just been kind of this influx of people that have really taken the ball and run in terms of what they're doing educationally within Christian schools and within just the education sphere.
What's been great about having done now almost 100 episodes is that we are meeting and hearing from people all over the country who are doing really innovative and creative and interesting things in Christian education. One of the things that comes up often on this show, and we talk about it a lot, and we've not had a lot of resources. We've tried to do a show or two about it. Kids in particular that maybe have needs beyond what we would consider, typical. I'm not sure if I phrased that exactly right, but we ended up crossing paths with our guest today, who I think is going to help talk about that very thing.
And so out of Virginia, we are so pleased to welcome Lorraine Hewitt. She is the superintendent of Dominion Ridge Academy. She also has organized and founded some different, organizations that work with students, families, help schools dealing with cognitive issues, different types of developmental issues. And she then has created organizations that pull all of that together. So she's a busy lady. Lorraine, we're so glad to have you with us today. Thank you for taking the time to come on Making the Leap.
Thank you both so much. I'm honored to be here. I just love what you're doing. I follow your podcast often and just love that you're helping Christian schools get started. Praise the Lord. Thank you.
Thank you, Lorraine. Let's start by asking you how you're doing it, because we get the question a lot. I want to get the terminology right. I never mean to offend or upset anyone needlessly, but it's not necessarily our wheelhouse. It is your specialty. How do you refer to your students?
Differentiated learning is out there a lot, just so that everybody understands that we all learn differently, and some need a little more obviously support than others. So across the schools today, especially post-pandemic, a lot of that terminology is happening because of the many different students that we have. But of course, we specifically have a program for belonging and dealing with students that need more support than just a classroom.
And so with that, talking about the different supports within classrooms, I guess before we even kind of launch into some of that, I am really interested to hear a little bit about your Center for Cognitive Formation. That was something that really jumped out at me, because I know that in any situation with families, when they're looking at how do we best help our children learn, oftentimes that comes with a lot of testing, that comes with a lot of analysis, psychological analysis. The forms are overwhelming. There's hundreds and hundreds of questions. And then parents are sitting there with all this information. What do we do with it? And I think that's one of the areas that you can come in to help. And then from there, so if you could explain a little bit about what you do on your end with that, once that happens, then how can schools use all that information to help support their students?
Great question. So for the Center for Cognitive Formation, that was started when actually my husband started the school, and we have always said we were going to have an inclusion program, having an older son who had some needs, and we couldn't find Christian schools that would support him. So when we started the school, it was going to be the journey of, okay, we want to do one and two things. We want to develop a culture around the school that will support the differentiated learning, meaning the faculty. And we want to make sure that there's a specific need in a student that they're getting identified in, that they get the support. And that's what the Center of Cognitive Formation does. The idea around this is to give the parents that understanding that, A, they can pick private Christian school and be served. But in the beginning when we started, we knew that it wasn't just about belonging and giving them the much dignity and value and worth but to be specific to what they needed, to what they identified. And so all those reports and all the things that parents get, and many, many times I've sat at meetings on the other side of the tables trying to support parents in meetings where they have a big support and a report for the kids and they don't exactly know what to do. This is an easier situation for them because we take care of a lot of that. Once they have their report, what we have done is we've merged with NILD.org, which is a company that we, in 2009, I actually went to a conference and said, Lord, guide us in how we can actually serve these students. We love them, we care for them, but we need to take the cognitive piece. We need to be able to serve them. And if they're dyslexic or if they're even ADHD, how will we get them to better be able to approach education with the godly biblical worldview, be understood, and to be served? So NILD.org, actually, just so you know, that is something that we have used since 2009. It's a great program. And what we did is we started implementing that therapy that they have. And that started our center off on getting the cognitive services for the students. That particular program, immediately, I actually was trained. I wouldn't bring it in the school without knowing it. I was trained in all three levels to see how exactly they work with the students. The center was set up immediately with different therapists, and that intentionality and that therapy and the approach to the student was immediately very successful. It wasn't a quick fix. It wasn't just tutorial. It was a therapy that said, I know why Johnny or Susie can't get the curriculum, and we're going to make sure that we work specifically with that cognitive deficiency, if you will, and strengthen the students so that they can be in the class and also be able to get the one-on-one therapy that is needed. So the center in the school specifically, again, addresses one-on-one. And the therapists that are in the center also work with the teachers in the classroom and help that inclusion piece so that the kids feel they belong, but they're also served cognitively. And it really makes it an easier adjustment when you know that for a regular ed teacher, because there's a lot of kids today, the research shows in Future Ready, I think 89% of the schools are taking kids with differentiated learning, but really low numbers are actually serving them to where they can be successful. And that's probably just based on knowledge on knowing how and what to use and how to develop the culture so that child is valued, the dignity is there, and all the students feel that they belong and work together well.
That's precisely what I wanted to ask you, Lorraine, was we've talked with previous guests on this subject. Some have rejected the idea that kids with differentiated learning needs need to be separated or apart from the rest of their classmates at all. They don't need a special facility, that they can learn right alongside the rest of their classmates. Is that your point of view? Because we've also heard from parents who say, gosh, there's nothing for my, I really want to put my son or daughter in this Christian school, but they have nothing for us. So I know you've heard that a lot. What are your philosophies on all of that?
You're speaking my heart. So just as we go and meet disciples, and we know that our goal is to get, I'm in a school that's, not a covenant school. So as we're making disciples and we're teaching them about their dignity and created in the image of God, we're also very passionate. I'm very passionate of helping schools outside of our school do that. We actually have something called bridgeeducation.org, which we developed as a school so that other schools can have the understanding of where to start and how to start within their school and what to do in order to serve these students. Because it is a huge need today. Christian schools are getting tons of kids from public school, which, praise the Lord. I mean, now we're getting, this is what we asked for and we prayed for. But to be ready for that means that we need to have an idea of where to begin. And while there's probably a lot of programs out there, what's most important is that the program that is intentionally looking at the child says that they understand where they are content and cognitively so that they can be served. But it's not easy. I just trust the Lord as I stumbled onto this back in 2009, realized that this is a program, and NILD does have a Christian background, two Christian women who started this over 42 years ago. Basically wanted to make sure that all kids belong. which I think today a lot of Christian schools are doing the belonging well, because the love of God covers all the children. What we might not be doing well is that cognitive piece to make sure they're being served so that they can go to college if they need to. A student with dyslexia has to get certain therapies to make sure that they're ready to go to college and be able to serve them well. So what we're doing as a school is twofold. We're actually, we formulated a program that actually does. I just had a school out from Maryland yesterday that came and spent the morning with them, getting them to understand what it is to start a program of belonging and worth, or inclusion, if you will, and how to develop the culture in your school and how to make sure the students' needs are going to be met. And for us, NILD has done that. The National Institute for Learning Development has specific ways to be trained, and again, has the understanding of the whole child. So doing this for all these years is wonderful, and the school has benefited, but I really felt the Lord had said to me, what about the others? Reaching out to these other schools now, I consult a lot of schools and give them not only just the NILD and understanding what it is, but the culture of belonging in the staff. Because when these students come into a school, it does change the culture. And the efficacy of inclusion, of course, is always us and them. And we want to we need to, in order to belong, we need to be on the same page. And regular ed teachers usually only need to know what they need to know. But today, we really believe that we all need to understand our students in front of us, as God has told us to do, because in education, our product, it's a life. And we know that we need to focus on this child. We understand that in education, it's all about relationships. Dr. Henry Cloud wrote a book on trust, a great book that talks about how important every relationship needs trust. And the first level of trust is understanding. And for us to understand our students, we need to understand how they think. And in order to understand how they think, then we need to understand the mind. God has developed an incredible mind. John Stone Street speaks really clear. He said, Christian educators, if you're going to do anything today, please teach these students how to think. Hmm. I think that example's been seen, the way Christ dealt with his disciples and how he spoke in parables and, you know, just thinking about the way they learn. And whether that's in an inclusion program or with the culture of the school, that brings a we and works together so that these two programs can work hand in hand.
When you are consulting with schools, and I understand like you're superintendent, you know, you're working with your school specifically, and then you're also consulting with others as well. When you're doing that, I guess I'd ask, does it matter the size of the school? Does it matter if you have 10 kids starting out in a little school, if it's a school that's just kind of getting off the ground? Does it matter if you have 300 in the school? I guess I would ask you to share a little bit about the range of schools that you've worked with in terms of size, and if there's any roadblocks or hindrances, whether small, big, or in the middle.
Yeah, I'll speak, if I could just jump on that, Lorraine, because I was going to ask something similar, which is, should small schools shy away from trying to do what you do? And I think maybe the tendency is, in Christine's question, well, only big schools could have the resources to achieve this, mm-hmm. not a school of 10 or a school that just started. So please, go ahead.
No, that's a great question, and certainly the numbers really have nothing to do with it. If you're a small school of 10, you're actually getting ahead, because as soon as you get the program implemented, you then develop the culture with the school as it grows. Yesterday, I spoke to a school of 200. Today, I spoke to a school of 1,300. The same message is present, that you need to develop the culture around the program, and that's the faculty to understand what's happening, and you need to have the intentionality and the therapy so that the kids are being served. Most of the schools today, whether they're just starting or they've been around, are dealing with the same problem, which is these kids are all coming our way. And they love Jesus, and they need to be served. And my heart was always, when I had my son, who's 35 now, and I couldn't find a Christian school for him, I just said, Lord, if I ever ran a school, I'm going to serve all children. Now be careful, because I had no idea I was going to run a school at that time. But I will tell you that God is very faithful to provide what is needed. And no, the size of the school, if you're new, you have a great opportunity to grow your school with the culture and develop your faculty around what is needed. If you're larger, it's a matter of sectioning off. As I've talked to schools, we talk about upper school, lower school, the idea of where inclusion would be, and then bringing the culture and the faculty to that together. So it really doesn't matter. The need is so large. And I really believe Lynn Swanner from ACSI, Association of Christian School International, has really done great work, research on how many people are willing to take the students, but it's serving the students that we need to get better at.
And okay, so I'm somebody, I have a background in education. I've got my bachelor's, I've got my master's, but I do not have special education qualifications as given to me by the state, right? So I think there are teachers out there specifically within this Christian school environment that say, well, I've not been trained. I've not, you know, I don't have a degree. I don't have that background. What would you say to that teacher who says, okay, fine, yes, they can, you know, bring these students who need this differentiated learning into my classroom, but I don't have that background? What is your response to that? Is that something that should be a roadblock, or is it something that doesn't matter?
It shouldn't be a roadblock at all. In fact, I would expect that to be stated, and I've heard it myself at our school. The key here is developing a teacher to understand how children think. For example, when we do professional development and teach them about how cognitive functions work within the mind, it immediately takes away and brings a language into the school that's different. For example, instead of stop running down the hall, self-regulate. Because we understand that self-regulation, as stated in Galatians, is an important part of how we respond. So now, instead of saying, you always forget your homework, it's maybe your planning behavior needs a little bit more strength. So what happens in regular ed teachers is they start to label and identify the way the child is made in the image of God, and the dignity is put in instead of just, you're klutzy. Well, maybe precision and accuracy is a cognitive function that you struggle with. So it changes the language, which changes the dignity, which changes the relationship for the teacher and the student. The approach to the student becomes different if you bring in the philosophy of understanding different parts of teaching. You don't get this in college. I mean, I have my master's and, you know, I've been to grade schools. They don't teach about the child. And many teachers will tell you, oh, I loved it. School was great. And then when you ask about the actual child, not much there. So what is important is to say, okay, if our product is a life and our interest is in the child, and curriculum is a great tool, but not necessarily the rule, because the rule is the child in front of us, then we need to understand these children in front of us. And to do so, we need to first understand how they think. Dr. Kathy Hopkins wrote a great book on teaching how to learn in a what to learn culture. And it is about understanding the incredible mind God has given us. And the more we understand, and there's simplicity to this, how we think and how it can be developed, the more we'll understand not only those who are struggling in that area, but those who have strengths in that area, and we want to work with the potential. So it is a language change. It is, I know my teachers, when they first got trained in this, actually asked for more professional development, and that doesn't happen.
I was going to say, that's a new one, right?
Extremely new. I think it's because they felt they were getting equipped with the right piece of information, the child, the student in front of them, and how they're learning. You know, a mechanic doesn't go to school and then find out just about the car and how it's built. They have to know the parts. And a lot of this is just the teachers feel that they're, you know, the fear of all this with regular ed and special ed is always the unknown. And how will I? Well, today, with all the kids and knowing anxiety is a little higher than it used to be and all the things that we're seeing with the achievement gaps, we need to know whether they're identified or not.
Yeah, Lorraine, that was...
Because every call I'm on, everybody I talk to does say one thing that's the same. Wow, so many kids need so much support. We don't believe they should all be identified, and you know, ADHD is being identified way too much through our nation right now. Inattentiveness is up over 30% in this world. So as educators, what does that mean for us? It means we need to understand what's happening with our students and the way that they responded to the pandemic. And nothing takes away from the dignity in this and believing God's in control. But this knowledge helps equip the teacher to approach the student differently.
I think that was one of the questions that I had, Lorraine, as I was listening to you talk and I was thinking about, you know, what differentiated learning means and what it looks like. You're talking about, oh, I would guess dozens of different conditions, some mental, some emotional, some physical. Are there anything, I guess, is there any child who has some sort of need that way that is too great? If it's a, you know, said another way, a child with anxiety is different than a child with Down syndrome. They need different things. But do you see those as the same or something different? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Of course, with the Down syndrome, and you might have an intellect disability, you're going to have a lot of cognitive. However, a lot of those students still have a lot of anxiety. So yes, we do have programs that are meant just for those who are struggling with anxiety, which is very real today. And then the content cognitive piece through NILD is the resource for anything with intellect or struggling with the content. Not necessarily because we want them to get an A on the test for the curriculum, though that would be great. But we find out what's needed to support them and why they're not getting the curriculum and what strengths do they have to better use to support their weaknesses. So yes, both are they're different and they're approached differently. But I have found, because we've had several students with Down syndrome, just to give you an example, that we do use the support for them emotionally as much as we use the content support. And I think that's just because the anxiety is there for us all in many ways. So there is a different, of course, when you're doing Down syndrome, yes, your content and your everything is a different level, because the Down syndrome student is going to struggle a little bit more. We had a Down syndrome student for 14 years who has now moved into another high school, a Catholic high school out in Northern Virginia. And she maxed out our programs and basically told me she was going to run the school and fire me many times. Could have. But she was a real example of early intervention and many years at the school. But she received both sets of support, just because, of course, she was struggling a little bit more with content. But it does depend on the child. And I think that's what I love about the therapy and what I love about being an administrator over the kids is they're teaching us. You know, boxing kids today might have been easier 5 years ago, but not today. Today, we need to look at needs and approach it. And again, the classroom needs to be approached differently to understand our students. And the inclusion programs need to be very intentional in the center so that it's specifically supporting what they need, rather than just saying, well, we'll take them in another room and we'll take their test in there.
Well, this is to that point. I was going to ask you that, because this is what I remember being a public school student, you know, 30 years ago or whatever, high school and elementary and middle. I remember the kids who had special needs. There was always a period of the day where it was almost as though they were sequestered. They were taken out of the place and taken somewhere else. And over there is the room where those kids learned. And I assume you're saying that's exactly what you want to get away from in a Christian school.
Yes, when you're talking about, I'm careful with the word inclusion, but when you're talking about inclusion and belonging, you're absolutely making sure that they're in the classroom. They do get pulled for their therapy, but they're not pulled from the rest of the day. And so we make it intentional for the teacher to understand what's happening when the child's in the class, again, depending on what's happening. But that belonging piece just is so important. And I think that's why we get so many people applying to the school with the special education, because they know that the kids are going to be in class. And I have walked down, you know, I've been in public high schools and go to meetings, and I see the room where the kids are throwing the ball against the wall, and it breaks my heart because the potential is much greater than what they're giving them. And I know they're bigger schools and they have totally different issues. But for us, we're accountable to, you know, to the Lord, who wants us to love and serve these children in every way we can. So they're involved with the classes pretty much throughout the day, except for their, you know, specific therapies. And those therapies are centered around the time. So if we have a dyslexia student and we know the reading and the spelling is going to be difficult, then being in the class at that time might be very difficult. So we'll pull them for the therapy during that time, and then they head back to the class. But I will tell you, many parents have given me testimonies saying, you know, we went to a party and our kids were, there's a ton of kids there, and there was a child who has Down syndrome, and my child ran right to that child. Mm-hmm. And it showed me just how important it is, you know, for the school to exist and be able to say we all belong and to not fear the unknown.
I think that's that piece of not fearing the unknown. I think that's what makes it hard probably for teachers, makes it hard for administrators, because it if it's not something that you've either grown up around or experienced, it does become
That's
something new. It's right. Yeah. Yes, I would say it's intimidating. And to that, I think for parents, it becomes intimidating to walk in. And we've heard story after story from parents that say, I tried to apply at this school. They won't take my child. This school won't take my child. What do you, I guess, I see where you're doing a lot to help support teachers, and I think that is wonderful. I think it's needed. How can a parent utilize what you're doing, especially with, you know, Bridge Ed? Is there a way that parents can access what you're doing and get information and talk? Because I think they're intimidated on a lot of ends too, making this transition from what they know in the public school sector and trying to find that fit because they want something different.
And I'll just tack on that question while we're on it. Is there a school in your mind, is there any reason any Christian school should say to parents, sorry, we can't help you here? So I know that's a lot, but I'll just throw it all at you once.
Well, the first question is yes, Bridget. I do read reports. Some parents cannot afford to go to private school and just ask for help. And I go to the public school meetings and become advocacy for them. Honestly, it's just building their confidence because they know their child best. Mm-hmm. And usually at those meetings, you know, I'm there to make sure they have the services they need. We actually have just started having people from the outside come to the school and receive some of the therapy so that if they can't afford the private school, that we, you know, we can support them at least with the therapy piece. So yes, I am very open, and lots of calls come in with parents with reports to say, could you just help me? What do I do with this? This is a book and I'm not sure how to read it or what I can do for my kid. I definitely feel that the parents probably know a lot more than they think they know, and that piece is real important for them. What was the second question? I'm sorry.
Just mine was, is there any reason in your mind that a school should legitimately look in a parent's eyes and say, I know you'd like to put your student with differentiated learning needs here, but we just can't accommodate them? Is there any? It seems to me, what I hear you say is there doesn't seem to be. I'm asking rhetorically. I would guess you'd say no. There is no reason a school would tell a parent we can't help you here, in your view.
In my view, yes, I agree with that 100%. I think that it's like anything today, especially today, that you can there's so many resources. Again, this is why Bridge Ed was even formed, so that we can bridge what we do well at our school and help other schools. My heart is to make sure that these kids can go. I mean, who's going to come to Front Royal from Northern Virginia? They're not. So let me help that school start a program and get what they need. I don't know that when schools say, oh, we can't have those children, I feel like they're just there, but they're just hidden. And I don't know today that there's many schools that don't have these children. So what happens when they find that somebody can't read? Do they then say, sorry, you know, you can't stay, you can't read. We can't get you to read. So I think we're facing something that is the inevitable. And I think that we should be well equipped for that. And that is my heart. I can't judge another school if they don't want to start a program unless I'm out there helping schools start a program. So that's my passion, is to make sure that what we have done in the last 16 years, 17 years at the school is to support others. It's really not as hard as people think. It's the unknown. And then on top of it, knowing that these students that are, as I talked to a school yesterday, and they said they probably have 20% of the kids that need support, but they haven't been identified because they don't take those kids, or they haven't been allowed to state they take those kids, but they're there. So I do fully agree with you that I don't believe that there's schools that should not want to support these learners. How much you support, some schools aren't going to accept Down syndrome children, and I understand that might be a little bit more than some want to, but the typical ADHD or the kids that are out there with dyslexia or the kids that are just struggling because we have an 8-month achievement gap, we need to consider serving those students and being able to equip them for all that they're purposed for.
I think that's a really important point to make, is that as we see a lot of families making a move from public education into Christian education, they are coming with that gap. I know ours did, and probably even had a little bit of that learning gap just from pre-COVID. I wouldn't even blame it on any kind of COVID type thing. I think just sheer size and numbers and
just, you know, a standard,
right?
A different standard.
Coming in, yeah. The school we're at was very willing to say, let's figure out how we can make some of those accommodations. It didn't have to be in the form of an IEP. It didn't have to be any of that, but they were willing to do that. And I think if schools can do that, they're setting themselves up to be in a much better place because they're willing to recognize we're not all going to be sitting at the expected level of sixth grade algebra or seventh grade math or, you know, eighth grade science, whatever it is. And I think it's a really good point to be making for parents and for schools that kind of change in thinking needs to happen. Absolutely. One thing you mentioned a lot earlier, and I just wanted to circle back to it fast because, again, we have been doing this podcast now for a while. We're right at 100 episodes, but that doesn't mean everybody's listened to every episode all the time. You mentioned that your school, you're with Dominion Ridge Academy, you mentioned that you're not a covenant school. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that for people that might be listening, you know, early, this is maybe the beginning start, they're starting here. Can you talk about what a covenant school is and isn't, what your school is and isn't for somebody? I know that's a little separate from the topics that we've, you know, from what we've been talking about, but it might just kind of help parents as they're thinking through what do we do here?
No, absolutely. I mean, that's something that as soon as the school is founded, you ask yourself, are we going to be evangelistic, or are we going to just have students sign, you know, parents sign a statement of faith? The Covenant School is a school that they sign a statement of faith. They might even agree that, yes, they're going to church every week and that the parents are fully on board and understand it's a Christian school. And again, are Christian and are Christian families. The evangelist school, we decided early on that we wanted to. My husband and I have always had a missions mind. We were heading to Africa before my son's situation. And I do believe that when we took the school this way, we knew it was going to be a little more challenging. You have to build a strong biblical worldview. But we did. We do have families that come in, and though they may not say, yes, we go to church and we know all about Jesus, they have to want to, obviously. They're coming in a Christian school, so there has to be an agreement. But with that is that we're willing to evangelize. So the covenant school is usually the statement that says, yes, we're Christians and we know we're in a Christian school and our family is a Christian family. And then ours being non-covenant says that we understand there's going to be students that come in. We actually had a Mormon family in years ago, and the mom asked if I would take her son. And I said, sure. And she said, would it be okay for him to bring his Mormon Bible? And I said, absolutely not. So she laughed and she said, okay, I tried. Well, by the end of the time that they were in the school, they had a situation in their family. And she came to me and she said, you're not worried about us being Mormons. I said, no, may the best God win. Well, through their childhood, it turned out that they had their little guys prayed a lot more to Jesus. She said to me, she goes, the best God has won. And we certainly see the difference. And I was a Mormon for 2 years, so I actually understood, you know, what was bringing into the school. But I also knew how close and how far they really are. So I trust that if we're, you know, showing the love of God and the gospel, that it will win. But it is, you know, more challenging. A lot of people are saying, with everything going on, we should just accept Christians. And that is totally a mission or vision of the board and the people in the school.
Yeah, Lorraine, could I push on that a little bit? I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm very interested in the differentiation here, because I heard what you said, and I just wanted to be really clear on it, because I wonder if other people heard it and got a little curious. You, in saying you're not a covenant school, there is no signing
statement
of faith and signing, I agree to this and I agree to that. But you very clearly said to the Mormon family, nope, there's not going to be any Mormon Bible here. So what that means, you hold your school and your students therein to some kind of standard. So what is that exactly? Can you explain it?
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. So we have a parent manual and a manual that they have to sign, which does say that they understand what the school stands for. And if they are not claiming to be Christians, they still are supporting it. So we do the walk of life and we do things that are required. So I'll clarify in saying that we know we have families that maybe have not been churched, but they have to sign our manual saying that they understand we are a Christian school. We will follow all biblical worldview. And what they may think on gray matters, we see black and white. And we have those conversations with them, which opens up for, you know, a lot more conversations. So specifically, we know we have families that are signing the manual and understanding and saying, okay, we will sign this statement. But at the same time, we know that they're saying, we aren't church, so this is new for us.
I'm really glad you clarified on that. And I wanted to ask that question. I meant to far earlier and just, you know, we got off on that tangent. But I just think... this is an important conversation, because I see it in groups that I'm a part of where, you know, some people take issue with signing a statement of faith. Some people don't want to do that. Some people only want to go where they're going to sign a statement of faith because they want to know who they're around and what they're about. And I can understand both ends. So I just really appreciate you taking the time to talk about that, because I want people listening in to know we are just about presenting this information and sharing it, disseminating it, because we want parents to use what is valuable to them. So I very much appreciate that.
Yeah, it's. I think of what I hear you saying.
There's been a lot more students coming into the school from public schools, so I'm sure covenant schools are struggling with trying to figure out who to take. And
yes,
I do see a lot of more biblical integration, biblical worldview, a lot more resources coming out. So I'm sure the schools are all, as we all are, always trying to represent God in every way we can to show these kids the love of Christ in a culture that's changing by the day.
May I oversimplify what you said by definition and see if I got it right? I think I hear you saying you don't have to be steeped in a relationship with Christ. You just can't come in antithetical to, hostile to, counter to our belief in Christ. Is that right? Oversimplified?
Yes. That's fine being, you know, evangelical or evangelistic, I'm sorry, in that matter. And I usually tell the students, you don't necessarily have to know Jesus, but you have to want to know him, because you're going to know him here. For instance, chapel's not an option. I mean, the Bible class is not an option. Obviously, everything we do, there are people who, you know, walk out and say, no, we can't do this, because they think it's going to be just a private school. But obviously, you know, ultimately, if you ask people today, and we've surveyed this so many times, it's always very interesting to me, what is the number one reason you have your child in the school? And they'll say, because of the faith. Even if they're not living it at home, they want it for their kids. So it's always an opportunity. And it's not always easy, but it's always an opportunity, because that has been, in our surveys, the number one reason that they come to a Christian school, obviously for the faith-based practices. And they're not afraid to admit that.
I think that's, I think if there's ever an advertisement for a school, it would be that they come for the faith, you know, and depending on how you get there, I know that can take different avenues. Lorraine, just one thing you did mention, and I wanted to share with people that are listening, as we kind of wrap this conversation up, you had offered people, if they called or contacted you through Bridge Ed, offering a free consultation for people that were listening that were curious about this. And so I just wanted to put that out there. And maybe if you could just talk a tiny bit about what that might entail and what that might look like. And then we will just wrap it up and definitely be praying for people, that schools, parents that are interested in learning more and taking this further.
Absolutely. Yeah, that call is to let them just ask all the questions that maybe they won't ask elsewhere, whether it's a school, you know, like, I don't know where to begin, or a parent saying, I've never liked what's happened, my son is not getting served. That call is to say, just speak what you need. Let me hear your heart. Let me be able to give you everything I can. And if I don't have the answers, I'll find them. A lot of the schools, I'm finding the same languages out there with, to help us build the culture that wraps around the dignity of Genesis 1:26. We are created in the image of God, and we must serve our students well. And for the parent that has, you know, the report, that doesn't understand what the report means, like, that's what I've done. I've gone into public schools and sat at meetings, and I get that eye like, what are you doing here? I wasn't well received when I first came to the community. But, you know, my interest is in the child. And I know how hard I've been on both sides of the table. I understand that it's not an easy understanding. And sometimes you just feel like you have nowhere to turn. And my heart is to make sure that everybody understands that God has a place, and he values these children, he values all learners, and we want to serve them and allow them to understand their purpose in Christ. We go from Genesis 1:26 and that dignity and the value and worth in Christ and the created in his image. That's like a sermon. Moving on to Jeremiah 29, where I know the plans I have for you, and not to harm, but to give you hope for a future. And we need that today more than anything. And my heart is to make sure that these kids understand that they have a purpose. And I know private schools want to serve them, but knowing how is a little bit difficult. So whether it's parents or schools, I'm here for that call to just listen and see what they need first.
And what would be a good number or a good email address or website for them to reach out to you to access that?
bridgeeducation.org
Okay.
would be best place. I also have some books on there that I refer to a lot, which just have helped me in my process and my journey. There's just so many great authors, and God bless the people who write the books and give us all we need to know for the support. But I think that this whole piece, when my board agreed for us to reach out and help other schools, it was a risk, and it is a risk because I'm reaching out to other schools and taking time. But I believe it's like making, you know, disciples. We need to not try to be the best school that has the best program. What does that do for people all over the world? So for me to be able to help others is just that call to make sure that all these learners are accepted and valued.
And so if I'm a teacher, I'm a principal, I'm a parent, I'm somebody that wants to start a brand new school in my community, or I've got a school established of 3,000 students, but I have questions, I can go to bridgeeducation.org and reach out to you to find out more.
Absolutely. All my calls I've talked to a couple of people who are just starting schools right now, and in helping them, like I said, if they're going to start right off the bat and this is their heart, then they get to start from scratch.
We will include all that information also in our show notes for people. I hope people reference Making the Leap podcast when they call you, just because part of my heart, I guess, in all of this is to continue to create just that community.
We've heard a lot about this subject.
They need
probably
this information.
More than anything.
Yes,
I think people, more people that listen to this show have reached out about this particular topic than just about any other one.
So I'm so grateful that you're offering that to people, because I don't always know where to send them. And now I know where to send them now. So I thank you so much for being so generous with your heart and your time on that. Lorraine, it was a pleasure speaking with you today. I had my mind kind of shifted on a couple things during the conversation, and I appreciate that and your willingness to share what you know. All kids, I do think, are worth it. And I think it's important that we continue to create avenues where all of them can be recognized and served well and loved on. And I love what you're doing.
Thank you, Lorraine.
Well, thank you both. I appreciate what you are doing and listen to the podcast. I love hearing more and more people getting supported. We need more Christian schools, so praise the Lord for that. And thank you so much for allowing me to be on. And yes, let's work together to get all learners served and understanding their purpose that the Lord has for them. So thank you so very much.
Amen. And with that, we will see you here next week.
Making the Leap is a podcast presentation courtesy of the Herzog Foundation. We'd love your feedback by rating us and commenting on the show.
And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Making the Leap.